Moin Moin, hier ist Olli von der Kevida Kreativbrauerei.
Hallo, hier ist Holger von Bierleben.
Hier ist von Elminia.
Servus, hier ist der Richie.
Hier ist Marc von Profaktum.
Servus, herzliche Grüße, euer Sebastian Briller und Steffen vom Brauhaus Riegel.
Moin Moin, der Hans aus Aschaffenburg aus dem bayerischen Nizza. Servus.
Hi, servus, hier ist der Sebastian von Kraftbräu. Herzlich willkommen.
Männerabend.
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 Männerabend. Ein wunderbarer Podcast und für mich absolut lebensnotwendig.
Prost. Cheers.
Hallo und herzlich willkommen zu einem Männerabend-Spezial. Wir sind bei Bier und Bier. Mein Name ist Dennis und Hinok von Omnipollo ist heute hier. Und zum Einstieg haben wir mal ein bisschen was vorbereitet. Ich habe Ihnen nämlich einmal die Top 20 und einmal die Worst 20 des Männerabends ausgedruckt. Wir wollen gleich mal gucken, ob er vielleicht von den schlechtesten 20 Bieren, die wir jemals getrunken haben, das ein oder andere vielleicht kennt. Micha, guckt schon mal, was wäre so dein Favorit, wenn du dir eins aussuchen müsstest von den schlechtesten 20 Bieren?
Glücklicherweise nicht eins davon bis jetzt getrunken. Ich bin ein wirklich glücklicher Mensch. Ja.
Mal gucken, ob Hinok tatsächlich eins davon kennt. So, these are the 20 worst beers we ever tried. So, maybe you take a look and this none of your beers, of course.
That's the only thing I was looking for. I'm also trying to see if there are any Swedish beers on here.
No.
Okay. Yeah, that one I think you can get in the Swedish liquor monopoly, which is the state-run store.
It's a mixed beer, so that's why it got a worse rating. But a very classic beer, it's German's best-selling brewery, the Oettinger Brewery. And the export beer is one of the worst beers I ever had. So I think it's here twice. Yeah, we have the 2015. You see, they do anniversary badges. We had the 2015 and the 2017 edition.
That one, Flensburg.
You
can also get that in Sweden.
Yeah.
I must admit that it was quite a long time ago that I had these beers, or some of them anyway.
So now we take a look at the top 20. Yeah, I'm pretty sure you know one or two of those beers. So, perfect. So, not sure if you find some beers you probably know.
Fantastic! This looks pretty amazing, actually. we're as competitive as the next brewer, and this looks like a good list.
Is this real or is this that's a real ranking.
Okay, didn't you?
The real ranking plays 1 to 4. And I have a very special surprise. Number one, I brought a bottle of it. Never bottled, but a friend of us, a home brewer Christian from Berlin, went to Dugge's tap takeover in Berlin 1.5 years ago, brought 2 empty bottles, and went to the Muted Horn Brewery in Berlin, filled it from the keg to the bottle, sealed it, and sent the beers to us. 2 bottles, one we tried like 1 year ago, and the second bottle we have in the fridge to try later.
That's absolutely amazing. I never get to try my own beers. Yeah. That's fantastic. But this is very flattering, of course. It's amazing. And there are a lot of beers I personally enjoy drinking a lot from this list. But there are also some I haven't even tried yet. So
yeah, but you came in, if I see the Siren Calypso, you came in and you had a Siren beer in your hand.
Actually, yeah. Yeah, so someone handed it to me because I complained that I hadn't had a lot of brut IPAs.
Yes,
that's a good example of it. Yeah.
Is this something you're interested in, brewing next or in the near future?
Yeah, like we try as many beers as we can. Yeah. I mean, we're curious as people, and I think it's interesting when something becomes, you know, when something makes a splash, like a new style or something. Yeah. You got to try as many as you can, you know. I personally enjoy the idea of something drier, so I think that's probably something we're going to explore. But yeah, we'll see.
Last time we met in Copenhagen for the Michaela beer celebration, you told me one of your favorite or the favorite beer style you have is German style Pilsner. You already had the chance today to try one or two.
Yes, and I haven't.
Oh,
that's the only thing. Yeah. We've been seeing it in some meetings, but I definitely intend to. Do you have any specific recommendations in town?
One of my favorite is from Buddelship, Hamburg brewery. They have a very modern interpretation, so a lot of flavor hops in it, one of my favorite German style Pilsner beers is from, yes, is from Augsburg, the Riegele Brewery. They have the so-called Herrenpilz, and that's one of my favorites. So, it's very hard to Pilsner beer is a very simple style, but it's very hard to make.
That's what I love about it. I mean, it's the small nuances that makes it, you know, genius or not so genius. And I think that as a brewer, and I'm not alone in any way, is a pretty enticing feat. It's like trying to sweep someone off their feet with subtle measures.
So can you give us a little bit more information about the meetings that took place today? So what can we expect? Even more Omnipollo beers in Germany, or I heard something about the Boost Cruise featuring you driving the chip. What is coming?
Yeah, I won't be under the influence when I drive, but but for sure. I mean, we're looking forward to doing a lot of fun projects, not only in Hamburg, but in Germany as a whole. And, you know, coming here is an absolute must if you work with beer in general. And I think I've been here twice now in the past 3 months, and there'll be more visits going forward.
Sounds perfect. And with Max, you have the perfect guy in Germany. He probably knows the most about the German craft beer market, has very good connections to Berlin, to West and to South Germany. So later we'll do a Q&A, waiting for some more people to arrive. It's still early. All the people have to still work. So we can start with one or two beers, and we'll do a Q&A later. And I'd be interested what the people have to have some questions for you.
I look forward to it.
And I hope you will answer them.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Thank you. So now we'll start with the Q&A. And just say your name, ask your question, and we're looking forward for the answer.
My name is Eric. I'm from the Netherlands.
Take it yourself.
And my question is, what is the story of the Yellow Belly?
Oh, my God. That's probably the toughest question right now. We had... We brewed that beer the first time 5 years ago.
Yes.
And we were paired together with a very good brewery called Buxton Brewery in the UK. We'd never met them before, but we were paired together through a bigger project arranged by another UK brewery called Siren. We were challenged to brew an interesting beer with a color. It's a long story. And the color was yellow. And so we sat down and tried to think of what that color meant, and apparently it has this sort of greater significance of this cowardice story that sort of took a spin off, and we ended up brewing a beer that was very sort of a clear first time attempt at making a political remark about sort of the right wing hardcore sort of movement that was sweeping through Sweden at the time, which is where we're from, but also Europe in general. And we brewed that beer together, and it's it was the first time we utilized a technique where we add essence and other things which are sort of very far away from craft brewing in general, but sort of the idea is to display something that says that it is something which it actually isn't. So it's a peanut butter biscuit stout that has these where we utilize these techniques. And we've been brewing it for 5 years, and this year we decided to make the final batch. And the reason for that is that we have a trademark. There's another brewery that has a trademark for that name. So we decided that maybe it's time to retire, and that's what we've decided to do. So yeah.
But he already told me there is already a beer that is almost similar. So who's in love, just like I am with a Yellow Belly, there it will be continued just on a different name, different recipe.
Yeah, so we brewed a 5-year anniversary beer, and that beer goes under a different name. It's called Coward, which is sort of a spin-off, a natural spin-off. And we released that beer in cans. It came out 3 weeks ago. Roughly, and we hope that it will be available sort of for the next coming sort of month.
We will ask Zünke when he arrives later if it will be available in Germany.
Hopefully, yeah. It is a spin-off. It's a one-off, so we'll see where we take that. But we're happy with it, so we hope people will like it.
Next question.
Two questions in one. You're sometimes described as a gypsy brewer, but a gypsy brewer to me is somebody who actually does his brewing himself, but in a different brewery. So do you actually now have a wee brewery?
We don't have a brewery, and we haven't had since we started out. What we do have now, which, and I don't call myself a brewer, is actually a brewer. So we employed a brewer 8 months ago. And one of the reasons for that is that our operation is a bit more complex today. We brew at 10 different breweries today, whereas in the beginning we were brewing at one brewery. So it was easier to be at that brewery as much as we could. So we are still a contract brewery, as you mentioned, but I guess as we grow, we try to be as present as we can. So, yeah, that's the short answer.
I had this idea that you were standing in your home kitchen, trying out the recipe and then adding a few notes to it and sending it off to Belgium or something.
But I think Henok did actually, I don't know if you guys know, but Henok did actually wrote a book about homebrewing, Brick Oil. That he released to Carl did the design, I think. So maybe from that perspective as well, like, how did you start brewing? You were a home brewer, and at what point did you decide, okay, this is something that is going to be a commercial project, and you want to live off of it? So how did that happen?
That's absolutely right. I think that, like, you know, the way I've approached it anyway is that I think of myself as a home brewer still, and that's actually right. We still home brew a lot, you know, to try things out. One of the benefits of that we found anyway, is that we approach it in a slightly naive way. So we'll come into a brewery and we'll say, let's try this, or let's do that, and so on and so forth, in a way which, up until this point anyway, has been you know, a fun thing first and foremost for us, but hopefully for the people who drink our beer. I think that that's changing, whether we like it or not, as we learn more, unfortunately. And so having another more technical brewer on the team has allowed me to sort of take a step back again and say, okay, how can I be naive for the next coming 10 years as I've been these 10 years that we've been at it up until this point?
You still have a small batch.
Absolutely. It's much nicer now than it used to be. I actually bought my second kit now for the first, so a year and a half ago. And up until that point, I've been brewing on the same kit, which was very run down at that point. So yeah, I'm happy about that.
Actually, this brings me to a question. When you brew a new beer, do you have to, do you tweak it a lot? I mean, do you brew, I don't know, 10 batches before you bring it to the market? Or, I don't know, it's the first just right?
It's an extremely relevant question. I think that just as I myself like to learn as I go, I've tried from the beginning to include everybody in this sort of experiment ongoing. And of course, now we try stuff very rigorously. If it's something that we don't feel that we have, you know, a very good grasp of, whether it's an ingredients or a process or and so on and so forth. But I think that what signified at least the first sort of 5 years of our existence was we would put stuff out which wasn't perfect. And I think that contributed to our sort of quicker understanding of what worked and what didn't. But it was also a way, I mean, it was a financial issue too, like in my personal case. Like, we couldn't sometimes be as rigorous as we wanted. Now we can be that, but as soon as we overdo something, it also has a tendency of becoming a bit boring. So I think that it's always a fine balance. Like, at some point you just got to say, let's try this, let's see what people say about it, let's try it together, sort of type of thing, and then get the feedback and then move on. So it's a bit of both. To answer your question,
strangely, I've heard that Carlsberg, where every beer is about the same shit, you should think, but they try about 1,000 brews before they get the right thing. They do so much brew that they are thinking about building a robot for tasting. It's odd, isn't it?
I'd like to try the 909 other ones. Not make a market. Maybe they are even better.
Yeah. Oh, I wouldn't.
Okay. Fair question. So is there a robot at Omnipolo tasting all the batches?
I mean, when you say that, I actually thought of one of the breweries that we work with, which is The Proof in Belgium. And to their credit, I think they have an extremely rigorous research program, which, including a bunch of other things, have a bunch of robots that actually do try things. So that's, it's not only bad. Like if you're, for example, buying hops, you buy that hops every year, and you try to replicate a beer that you've produced the year before, and their robot can actually tell you whether that hop that you've bought is A, the right one, but also whether it's the same quality as last year or whether you need to add more or less. So yeah, boring answer to a fun question, but that's sort of the gist of that.
Maybe they can't find people who want to try their beer, so they have to.
Possible. And how many people are behind Omnipollo? So we see you brewing all those beers, traveling around the world, but how many people are the core Omnipollo team?
So we've been a very slim operation for many years, and in the beginning of this year, we started building an organization around it, partly because it's a more complex operation, and I think that in a scenario where I see a lot of breweries trying to focus on their home market, I think it was always very important for us to have, trying to find like-minded people that were, for one reason or another, spread across the world. And I think that requires more people. So I would say that the core team is 10 people at the moment. And then we have, two great bars that we run with a bunch of more people and so on and so forth. But so we're 10 altogether, and they all deserve equally as much credit.
Not sure if you can tell us about that or if it's a secret. How many beer you're selling per year under the Omnipollo brand?
Yeah, that's also escalated a little bit. So I think the first year, the first year and a half, we brewed one beer. That was Leon. And then we started adding sort of one to two beers the first sort of 2 to 3 years. I think we did about 80 beers in 2018, which is, an enormous amount. But that said, we have beers that are only released in the US, for example, and we have beers that are only released in Europe. So we try to take every opportunity we can to try a new idea rather than try to replicate what we've done before.
And can you tell us something about how much liters, hectoliters, barrels? Just to give us any imagination, I have no idea how many beers are sold in the craft beer market for Omnipollo.
So we do about 2 million liters in total. Which is, it's a huge, amount of liters for us, but spread over 45 markets, it's pretty small, yeah.
You're still available to brew more, to produce more beer, so if the people get thirsty at home, there would be beer available.
We aim to, brew as much as we can, of course, if we feel that we can deliver quality. I think at this point, brewing more liters per se it's not a goal in itself at this specific moment, but that's more to do with the fact that we're trying to research and develop the quality of some of our segments and so on and so forth. So we will definitely grow over time, but I think that it's very important to take a breather at this point and say, okay, how can we make sure every single glass is up to our standard? Yeah.
So what's so special about the German market and your connection to Brausturm here in Hamburg?
They sell a lot of beer.
Most of the beer Max drinks himself, but he pays for it, so it's fine again.
No, but they remind us a little bit of what we are doing. I think that they're roughly the same size as a company. They've been around roughly as long. They're very sort of enthusiastic about what we do, and we're enthusiastic about what they do. And I think that, they're one step closer to trying to understand this huge country that's in the middle of Europe that's very, very into beer in general. But, there's also a huge amount of patriotism in a country like Germany about the beer. And so to make us better, I think it's just a natural instinct for us to try to be here and learn, but also trying to be here and prove ourselves and try to show what we do and get feedback.
Last time we talked in Copenhagen, you told me German style Pilsner is your favorite beer style. Now we're taking a look at the refrigerator, and the only German style Pilsner we found was the one you did. And of course, I have to ask Max about this. Max, what were you thinking?
Yeah. Yeah, good Frage.
Yeah. Yeah. The thing is, the demand for German style pilsner vanished. It might come back the next year, I think. It's like everybody's saying now lager beer is coming. We just talked about it, that lager beers are coming back. So pilsner as well. And yeah, I'm not sure though if that's going to happen. It might take it a year longer. But so far, most of our customers are looking for either hazy IPAs or big and bold imperial stouts.
First end of the German beer market is craft beer at the moment?
We think between 0.5 and 1% actually, but it's a big market, so that's quite an amount, even if it's just 1%.
I just read in America it's 13%, but the 13% use more resources than the 87 of the other stuff.
Yeah, the hops and stuff, that's true, yeah, yeah, right.
So, Max, maybe you can tell us, you already thought about a great beer festival in Germany, just like we talked about the Copenhagen Festival. We talked about the Booze Cruise. Give us a little insight into what's happening into the German craft beer market 2019.
Yeah, I can't give any information regarding the festival because we have neither found a location nor set a date yet. But we hired somebody, I told you the last time I was here, to do that. So, you know, I will give myself that space and say, if we're not going to make it late this year, we will do it next year. But we try to do it this year. But apart from that, we are planning to organize like an Omnipolo cruise this summer. I think we can announce that already, even though we haven't found the date yet. We have, but I'm not going to tell you. But we haven't found a boat, so we have to do that as well. But of course, Hanok is coming back for that event, I think. We already scheduled it, and then we will rent a boat and hopefully have a few hundred people on that boat drinking those beers.
More questions. More questions from the people just arrived. Sönke, now we can finally talk about all the Omnipolo beer, because Max always told us, oh, I don't know what we're talk. All the people said they need more Omnipolo beers in the German market, and yes. Max said you are the one responsible for it.
Yeah, and I try my best to bring all the stuff that Omnipolo brings.
What about
out.
The Coward? Hinok just told us Omnipolo beer, the Yellow Belly beer. It's the last batch. I already reserved it, you know. And the Coward is quite similar. And he said it was released three weeks ago. And I was wondering if it will make the German market.
What was the name of the beer again?
Coward.
Coward. I think it's not on the newest order, probably.
We have to work on this, I think.
We will work it out and get back.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. This sounds like a special delivery.
There are coming a few Omnipolo beers end of this week, also for the big German nationwide event. So there's some special stuff coming soon.
So what makes it for you? You have to order all the Omnipolo beers. I remember 1 year ago we met at the Senatsburg Anstich, and you told me it's like you're getting an email 2 a.m. in the morning and who's sending the order back first, get the beers. So how crazy is this? Because the demand is much higher than the beers that is available.
Yeah, sometimes you have to be very quick. The newsletter from the Omnipolo guys is coming out, and then we're just typing in what we want, and sometimes we don't even get the amounts that we want. It's sometimes like, okay, you can have 5 cases because so many people want this beer. But we are happy to everything we can get. So.
So you still have to work on that for the German market. So you have to make a reservation for some beers for us.
For sure. we'll work harder next day.
Perfect. So do we have any questions left? I think we can close the Q&A now. Thank you so much for taking your time. One more question?
Additives, aroma in beer. Why, what, how? And I heard there was a problem in the States about it.
First time you imported the beer to the United States, there was not the ingredients weren't on the label, I think.
Yeah, so every country is different, and you need to state certain ingredients, and you don't.
We should state.
Yeah, exactly, and that's absolutely right. I mean, we so in the U.S. there's a we always state what we use, but we don't state every single component of every single ingredients that we use. And in the US, there was a component that we weren't even aware of ourselves that was being used in one of the additives that we were using in a beer. So yeah, we've rectified that and, you know, went with it. But it's it's a challenge with so many different markets, because there's only so much space on a can, and you know there needs to be different languages and so on and so forth.
The question is more, why do you use additives when you could put real stuff in it?
That's a very, very good question, actually. And to be frank, like, we have, I mean, when we did it the first time 5 years ago, no one was doing it in our knowledge anyway, or at least not, you know, that we knew about. And I think that we love experimenting. We love trying new methods. We love trying things that no one is doing. And we did that, and it was to a huge success. I mean, to be frank, I think Yellow Belly was, at the time when it was released, and so was some of our other beers that we were brewing at the time, received in a very sort of enthusiastic way. Today, I can say that we, you know, we prefer using natural ingredients to the extent that we can, and so we do. And I mean, but it's more a, you know, a question of palates rather than politics or anything like that. I don't have any issues using any ingredients, as long as it's not harmful for your body. That's basically where we draw our limits. But in terms of traditions, I think that anyone who drinks our beer is sort of bought into the fact that we're not a very traditional brewery. And so we feel that we have a sort of free playground. We try not to limit ourselves, basically, based on anything else than is it harmful for you or not. And as long as there's no research that points in that direction, we'll try stuff which might enhance the beer or not enhance the beer. There are, I would say, out of our stouts, probably a third or a fourth utilize aroma at some point in the process, depending on what beer it is. And that's in terms of volume, not in terms of every single beer we make. If it's in terms of number of beers, it's probably a very, very small amount, but in terms of volume. And so it's very, very seldom what we do it now to enhance anything, because we've learned more. We know how to use aromas in a different, or ingredients in a different way, and aromas actually, than we did 5 years ago. So as we get better, I think we're, for personal preference and taste, moving away from that.
I think you don't actually use a lot of coffee, do you? Where Sweden is actually known as a coffee drinking nation as well. So I would expect more coffee beer combinations of you.
We do. We're exploring coffee more now, I think. I live in Ethiopia at the moment.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Oh, wow,
yeah.
Coffee.
Yeah. And so, absolutely. Yeah. And so we've done one beer.
Did you?
With a coffee growing farmer that we're very happy with.
What's it called?
It's called Geja. It's a coffee grower called Geja Village. And so we did an Aeon version with Geja coffee in it.
Is that out already?
It should be here. Yeah, I'll try to find it on the shelves.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you.
And so I think that we try to dig, you know, one layer deeper right now into that. I mean, we've used coffee in a couple of beers before, but it hasn't been the, you know, number one ingredient. It's been a complement to vanilla.
Because I think one shop in Hamburg that also sells your beer is a Swedish coffee house.
Oh yeah, that's right. That's absolutely right. So that's like that's the first place in Germany to sell our beer, if I'm not mistaken.
So I think it's time for the final question. Before we give the microphone to Hendrik, who's also a part of our Männerabend team, we can make sure you'll be back in Hamburg this year. We'll do the tasting at the Elbphilharmonie, you and me, putting some Omnipollo beers on tap, doing a little tasting, and you have to say yes?
Yep.
Yeah. We have that on tape. Yes. Final question goes to Hendrik.
Yeah, very thirsty now. What would you think? Can we get an anagram bourbon barrel aged around here?
Maybe there's one bottle left, I'm not sure.
Might be.
I heard something about
that. Are you
I'm very thirsty.
He's thirsty too, so I think we should check it out.
Let me get the bottle, one of only two bottles, I think, available worldwide. So we'll try it, and for the final feedback, we'll be back. And thank you so much.
Thank you.